BreweryDB and Good Beer Matters have partnered to share the education and stories of craft and culture found in every glass. BreweryDB is the largest curated source of brewery knowledge and serves to connect craft beer lovers like yourself to your next brewery experience. Expand your knowledge of brews and create personalized brewery routes in your own neighborhood and nationwide. Visit BreweryDB.com today and be the first to explore this all-new experience. My name is Jeremy, and this is Good Beer Matters.
We're seeing a whole new focus on health. If you want to have pain relief, it'd probably be a combination of CBD and maybe CBG with a little bit of CBN. Beer is something that's been around for so long, but we're taking it to a whole new level.
I remember tasting a few different near beers or NA beers many years ago. They seemed to represent an obligatory public service that warranted no further innovation. That, of course, is my tactful way to say they pretty much sucked. But as I've matured in my beer journey, I found NA beers have a place in my beer fridge, especially now that craft brewers have started making some pretty solid options. My next guest discusses the role of NA beers and why he's going one step further by putting some buzz back in the brew. I've studied, traveled, and tasted my way through some of the best beer the world has to offer. Over the past few years, I've also spoken to beer industry leaders from around the globe, and one thing is certain, the art, the science, and the culture of beer has more of a profound effect on us than we realize. There's a story of craft and culture found in every glass, and I intend to get to the bottom of it. These are the stories of us, of great food and the beer that brings it all together. I hope you enjoy episode 105 of Good Beer Matters with beer doctor Keith Villa. Well, today we're kind of diving into a category of beer that is frankly new to a lot of us, but in some respects it's very, very new to a lot of us. We spend a lot of time thinking about beer, talking about beer, studying beer, but this is an area that that we've really have never gone before on the Good Beer Matters podcast. Dr. Keith Villa, thank you so much for being here, and I can't wait to hear what you're up to. It's kind of an exciting frontier in the beer world.
Well, hi, Jeremy. Thanks for having me on, and it's my pleasure to be here and share some of my knowledge and give you some of my views about what this whole new frontier of beer kind of looks like.
Yeah, I'm especially interested in this stuff because it feels like, let's just say that craft beer began in the mid-70s, just for round numbers. I mean, we can all trace it back to Fritz Maytag at Anchor and Jack McAuliffe at New Albion, and that was ground zero. And so I'm just using that as a middle point. So basically that puts us into the craft beers now in its mid 40s. It's, I think of it as, we're in a midlife crisis and we're thinking, beer's thinking, well, I don't need a red sports car and a new spouse. I need something, but I do need something new to strive for. And you're effectively providing something new to strive for, but that's just my little teaser. Before we get into that, who are you and what is your background in beer?
Okay, well, yeah, that's a great place to start. Yeah, so I'm Keith Villa, and I've been a brewmaster my whole life. I've also been a beer judge. I am a beer judge. I started judging at the Great American Beer Festival back in 1993, and the World Beer Cup when it first started, I believe 1996 was the first one. I've traveled as far as Japan to judge beers. And I do have a doctorate in brewing. I'm one of a very few number of people in the world who actually has a PhD in brewing. Mine is from the University of Brussels in Belgium. I was over there for 4 years and studied beer and yeast and successfully defended my doctoral dissertation. And it's Yeah, and it really is for me a pleasure to work with beer, around beer, to taste beer. And as I said, it's been my whole life. My first big creation was Blue Moon Brewing Company and the Blue Moon line of beers. I did that in 1995. And that was as an operating unit of Coors Brewing Company. I also reformulated the Coors Banquet beer in 2001.
Oh, yeah.
And so I know, as I talk to a lot of brewers, it's interesting because a lot of them say that Blue Moon was their gateway beer into craft brewing and craft beer, and really got them interested in tasting beers and eventually becoming a brewmaster. And then, as I speak to a lot of brewers, I was surprised at how many actually drink the Coors Banquet beer, because they say that it's just a real nice, refreshing, flavorful beer that they can drink a lot of while they're working just doing whatever has to be done. It's a beer they can enjoy, and it's not going to get them drunk because it comes in at 5.0% ABV. So I was really proud of that one too. I created a whole lot of new products for Coors while I was there for 32 years, and then I retired. I reached the point where you could literally walk out the door with your pension and your health insurance, all this stuff, as a retiree. So I did, and then the day after I left, I started my own brewery with my wife, and it's a brewery called Seria Brewing Company, dedicated to making only alcohol-free beer. And some of that beer is then sent to the cannabis market, where it's infused with THC and CBD. And yeah, we started that back in 2018, and here we are in 2022. We're in 20 states with our non-alcoholic beer, and we're in Colorado and California with our cannabis beer. So that's in a nutshell my background, and kind of brought you up to where we are today.
Perfect. And that just gives us the pivot point to go in so many different directions. But I do want to go back. You said you got a PhD in brewing, but I can only imagine that you must have been absent the day that they talked about how to effectively retire from the brewing biz, because you're supposed to like go off and, I don't know, go somewhere tropical, take a vacation, or just do something great, and then get bored and then figure out what to do next. But you said the very next day you started the next brewery. Did you take any time off at all?
No, not really. It's from my perspective, I love beer. I love brewing. I love drinking beer. And to me, it's been my whole life. So I was excited to start the next chapter right away. So I got to work, and it was interesting because initially our plans, my wife and I, were to launch a beer with cannabis since it had become legal in Colorado.
Yeah.
We quickly realized a few things. Number one, you cannot mix alcohol and cannabis in the same beverage and offer it for sale legally.
Legally. Yeah, you can on the street corner, first one's free, tell your friends, but legally, you can't do that.
Yeah, and so, and that comes about from the Fed's perspective, because they don't allow anything with alcohol to be infused with something that's federally illegal. And then at the state level, if you're making a cannabis beverage, the state cannabis authorities do not allow alcohol to be put into any beverage with cannabis. So you really have to be careful and come up with a product that is alcohol, well, non-alcoholic or alcohol-free. And that's something else that I think a lot of your listeners may or may not know. My guess is they probably don't, because I've spoken to a lot of craft brewers and professional brewers. And it turns out that the federal government has different classifications for beer based on alcohol. So if it's above 0.5% ABV, it's called beer. So all of us know and love beer. And to legally be called beer, it has to be above 0.5% ABV. If it's below 0.5% ABV, the government says that you have to call it non-alcoholic beer, so NA beer. And that's what most people refer to that category as NA beer.
Well, that is a major topic that we're going to dive into. But can I go back one more time? Because we kind of glossed over the fact that you have a PhD in brewing. Very few people have a PhD in brewing. But we need to unpack that a little bit. I mean, you have a PhD in brewing from the University of Brussels. How, why, what does that mean? What does that give you when you're brewing? I mean, help us understand. For those people who are like, wow, I can get a PhD in brewing, help us understand what all that entails.
So really what it entails is a really deep scientific understanding of beer and how it's made and all of the biochemistry involved, the biochemical reactions. And getting a PhD means that you have done experiments to push the envelope of what's known about beer. So your work as a PhD candidate is something that researchers look at and they say, oh, I didn't know that particular aspect. And now I know it. Now the knowledge base of beer has become a little bit bigger and we understand why things are happening a little bit better. But so, yeah, you're just like any other area of study. When you get a PhD, you try to push the envelope of what is currently known about that area. So in my case, I studied the brewing process and really focused in on diacetyl or VDK. Mm-hmm. And for your listeners who are beer sommeliers, the VDK is that buttery taste that you get when a beer is usually very young or has not been aged correctly. Mm-hmm. Some people describe it as butterscotch, some as movie popcorn butter, mm-hmm. Some as just an oily texture on the palate. A lot of different perceptions on what it actually is, but when it's there in a strong enough amount, almost everybody agrees it smells like butter, and it is an off taste. And my doctoral dissertation was to study that, to find out where in the yeast it originates and how to get rid of it in a quick manner versus aging, which a lot of us are familiar with aging or lagering of beer, which is to mature the flavor of it and really get rid of some of those young notes like diacetyl so that the beer tastes smooth and good and finished. So with my work, I was able to document that the diacetyl comes from an amino acid biosynthetic pathway in the yeast. So in the yeast, it makes proteins, but prior to that, it has to make amino acids, which are the building blocks of proteins. Mm-hmm. And one very, very critical pathway is called the ILV pathway, the isoleucine valine biosynthetic pathway. And those are two amino acids that are critical for the yeast to make proteins. And so it's a pathway that the yeast relies on heavily for protein synthesis. The one thing about that pathway that is interesting to brewers is that the second step of that pathway involves a certain compound called alpha-acetolactate. So it's an intermediary in this pathway that the yeast makes. And alpha-acetolactate builds up in the yeast because the next step in the pathway is kind of the rate-limiting step. And so as a result, alpha-acetolactate builds up inside the yeast and it starts spilling out into the beer as it's fermenting. And as it does that, it turns into diacetyl, which smells like butter.
Yeah.
And once it turns into diacetyl, the yeast can take it back up and then make it into a almost flavorless compound. So So during aging, what brewers try to do is limit the amount of diacetyl that's produced. And then towards the end of fermentation, a lot of brewers will bump up that temperature to a little bit warmer to allow the yeast to take up the diacetyl and turn it into a flavorless compound. And so and that's one of the reasons for the diacetyl rest during fermentation.
So please finish.
And for my doctoral dissertation, one thing I did was to clone the gene because, as I said earlier, the alpha-acetolactate builds up because there's a rate-limiting step right in front of that doesn't move fast enough. So for my dissertation, I cloned the gene for that next step, and I put a bunch of copies of that gene into the brewer's yeast so that it could overproduce that next step. And that, sure enough, decreased the amount of diacetyl that the yeast made during fermentation. And so so with that, I wrote my doctoral dissertation, defended it, was awarded a PhD with great distinction. So it would be the equivalent of magna cum laude.
And wow.
Came back, and then first thing I did was create Blue Moon Brewing Company, and started off from zero to 10 years later, making it the biggest craft beer brand in the United States.
Yeah, talk about the beer doctors about to operate. I do want to poke down a quick rabbit hole, because my listeners who have been around the beer world and know flavors fairly well and the brewing process fairly well, you just described it in a lot of science, but of course, you know, homebrewers know that if you're lagering, then you want to do a diacetyl rest, and you just kind of warm it up to room temperature for, I don't know, roughly 24 hours or so, put it back in the cold crash and taste it along the way, but your chances are you're going to be fine. And we know that diacetyl is a vicinal diketone, a VDK, as you called it. But one thing that I've never satisfactorily answered or have gotten an answer to is, what exactly is a vicinal diketone?
Human beings have used the power of storytelling for millennia. We use stories to educate, motivate, and inspire others to lead better lives. If you're a business in the beer industry, we can use the power of story to better serve your customers. At Mountain Sea Media, I help you tell your story and keep your brand on top of mind. Mountain Sea Media is your resource for engaging, multimedia beer content. Contact me at jeremy@mountainseamedia.com to discuss your next project. After all, it's your story. I'll help you tell it.
So what it is it's a compound where you have two ketone units right next to each other. So in the vicinity, you're right next to each other.
Okay.
So with diacetyl, you have these two keto groups just right next to each other. So you have a carbon with a carbon, and then those two carbon molecules have a double bond to an oxygen, and they're literally right next to each other. So that's why a vicinal diketone. So you have a diketone. So you have the two groups where there's a carbon with a double bond to an oxygen, and since they're right next to each other, in the vicinity of each other, really, or the next door neighbor, we call it a vicinal diketone. So VDK is nothing more than a carbon compound that has maybe four or five carbon units, and two of those units have keto groups right next to each other. And it turns out that those can get converted into very flavorful compounds such as diacetyl.
And for all you college kids out there, listen to this podcast, drink some beer, and you can learn chemistry. That is my take-home message for today is, you know, beer is chemistry. And the way you describe that is just so, I'm going to say kind of obvious now. I'm kind of... Wish I should have thought of that sooner, but that makes perfect sense. And so I appreciate you describing that. But talking about your retirement project, your new company, Seria, what does Seria mean?
So the name Seria is interesting because when my wife and I launched the company in 2018, we filed for a name for the company, and we found out right away that at that time, I believe there were maybe 7,500 craft breweries in the United States.
Oh gosh!
So it was well over 7,000, and virtually all of the cool names had been taken. you look around in, you know, any town in the U.S., you'll see at least one craft brewery, and that craft brewery will generally have a really cool name. Either it'll be the town name, or they'll come up with a really cool name, and we would come up with names and go to the TTB or the trademark office and type it in for a search, and it was taken, and so finally my wife said, you know what, she said, you were at the campus getting a PhD, the food campus in Belgium. And the name of that food campus was colloquially referred to as the Seria campus, which stood for the Center for Teaching and Research in the Food Industries.
Oh, okay.
And the reason for that is because there was a brewing school on that campus, a chocolate making school, a culinary school, a hotel and restaurant management school, just all these different schools that serviced the food industry. But the name Seria also was derived from Ceres, the Roman goddess of agriculture. And if you go to the campus, you'll see a huge statue, a golden statue of Ceres, the Roman goddess of agriculture. And so the name comes from those two entities, the campus and the Roman goddess. And so we did a search and we found out that name was not taken, that it was free and available. So we said, okay, we're done searching. This has been terrible because literally every time you think you've come up with a cool name, you enter it and it's either been taken as a brewer's name or as a name of a beer. And so it's like, okay, Seria's free and clear. Let's do it. So we filed and trademarked it with the profile of Ceres. She's the one who adorns our labels, her profile. And if you look at her profile, you'll see that she's wearing a laurel wreath made up of cannabis leaves and hop cones.
Oh, yeah.
And we thought that was appropriate because that's how we got our start. And after we launched, eventually we expanded into NA beer without cannabis too. So we have both infused and non-infused lines, but we kept our nice profile of our Ceres goddess and so that's where the name comes from, is from her, as well as from the campus where I got my PhD.
And I kind of, I guess I projected, and I'm obviously wrong, but I thought there was some Spanish connection to like cerveceria or carniceria type of thing, and or maybe that's part of the root of what went in there. But I think it all fits, and I love your label as well, especially now that I understand it a little bit better. But we do have a whole lot of acronyms that we need to discuss, the first of which is NA, or non-alcohol. And you've gotten into that specifically, but it seems like the craft beer industry is kind of obsessed with NA right now. Why is that such a big deal now of all times?
Well, to be honest, if you look at the sales of craft beer, sales have really slowed over the course of the pandemic, and in fact, a few breweries have gone under because of the financial stress that they're under. And so, so it turns out that if you look at what areas of beer are experiencing growth right now, you'll certainly see the imports, but specifically the Mexican imports, like Corona and Modelo, Those are growing. You'll see NA beers are growing. And for the last few years, seltzers, hard seltzers were growing, but of course that those have come to a really big, almost screeching halt.
Oh, really? Wow.
They're not growing as fast as they were. So, because we were seeing, growth, gosh, north of 50%, you'd see 80% growth, 100% growth, just massive amounts of growth during the pandemic. And then as soon as the pandemic started easing up, the sales of hard seltzers slowed down a lot. Even Boston Beer, Sam Adams, had to revise their growth forecasts because their seltzers really slowed down, and they had to write off, I forgot what it was, I think it was north of $100 million worth of inventory. So,
Wow.
a lot of brewers had to reevaluate their stands with hard seltzer. And of course, that's not to say that all hard seltzers slowed, but the majority did, and the numbers prove it out. But the area that did show growth was non-alcoholic beer. And non-alcoholic beer is showing growth anywhere from, if you look at the numbers and look at the markets, you'll see anywhere from 8% growth up to the high 30s as a whole. And of course, there are some breweries that are showing huge amounts of growth because, they went from producing nothing to producing a few hundred barrels, and all of a sudden it's really taking off. And the other big reason for the growth is that we're seeing a whole new focus on health, and you're seeing people realize that alcohol, if you drink a lot of alcohol, it's not healthy. And I think all of us know that, but it's easy to forget when you're with friends on a Friday night or a Saturday night, and you start drinking craft beer, and maybe the brewer there has a new Imperial IPA made with a new type of hop, and of course everybody's got to try it, and myself included. And sometimes I need two to actually get a good full flavor aspects there. So, and sometimes even three. But I enjoy trying beers and drinking beers. And but what we're seeing is that a lot of people are looking at beer and at alcohol and starting to cut back. And because of that, they're searching for non-alcoholic drinks that look and taste good. And that's one big reason why we're seeing craft brewers get into this and really starting, starting to search for a whole new income stream. And I guess the very last thing to touch on is that there's no alcohol there, so you don't pay federal excise tax.
Yeah.
So it really makes it advantageous for brewers to get into it. But it is difficult to make good tasting non-alcoholic beer that's safe to drink.
And I've recently learned that in an industry, generally speaking, in an industry that is willing to share information with others, maybe not share information with the brewery down the street, your direct competition, but definitely breweries in different regions, and it's a very jovial industry. But when it comes to developing the NA beer that looks and smells and tastes just like an ordinary craft beer, that is highly secretive. That is everything was keeping that under their hat. And the way it was described, it kind of made it sound like that getting that really, really good non-alcoholic beer is like the race to space, or the race to be the first to break the sound barrier or the 4-minute mile, but in the craft beer version of that. Would you agree with that, or do you have a different take on this?
To a degree, yes, that's correct. But there are quite a few craft brewers who, rather than trying to be innovative and create a new way to do this, they're looking out to see what technology is out there, because there are some decent technologies out there to make non-alcoholic beer. And actually, I should back up and say, earlier I talked about the definitions of beer. So beer is above 0.5, non-alcohol is below 0.5, But there is a third category that the government allows you to label your beer as, and that's only if it has 0.00% alcohol. And that's a very unique category that the government allows you to label as alcohol-free or AF. So if you see AF out there, alcohol-free, the government allows that only if they cannot detect a trace of alcohol in your beer. So you have to be a true 0.00%. And the vast majority of craft beer out there that's non-alcoholic is just that, non-alcoholic, typically having, I've analyzed a bunch of them. They'll range anywhere from about 0.3 up to 0.49% ABV, although there are quite a few that really can't control it, so they come up to as high as 2.5% ABV. Mm. So there's some that just have no control of the process. And of course, as a consumer, if you want to avoid alcohol, maybe you're on medication, maybe you're a female who's pregnant, maybe you follow a religion that says you shouldn't have alcohol. Well, for those folks, they really have to watch out, because there are some non-alcoholic craft beers out there that can come in at above 1 or even 2% ABV. So just be very, very cautious. And then the other thing to be cautious of is, without alcohol, the beer has no natural protection against pathogenic microorganisms. So with alcohol, of course, beer is safe, and that's what made water safe to drink years ago for the Egyptians and the Sumerians, is they would just turn water into beer, and that little bit of alcohol in the beer made it safe to drink, because then they wouldn't get sick from pathogenic microorganisms. Now, when you take the alcohol out, the beer, the non-alcoholic beer, then becomes susceptible to the growth of these things, such as Listeria, E. coli, botulism. And so that's why you have to be very, very careful making these things, to the point where not just cleanliness, but these things have to be pasteurized. And what you find out is quite a few of them are not pasteurized. And an easy way to see that is most of them will have some verbiage on the label that says keep cold or keep refrigerated. And if you don't keep it cold or don't keep it refrigerated and just let it sit out at room temperature, you'll see the cans start to bulge out.
Yeah.
And when they do that, you know, something is growing inside, whether it's brewer's yeast, which is re-fermenting, and then your product is no longer non-alcoholic. Or you've got potentially pathogens in there that are growing and turning it into something that could make you sick. So that's why this category is very difficult, because you can't just jump into it and make a product and get it out there to sell. You have to be very careful and pasteurize. And that's, as I go around and talk to a lot of craft brewers, there's a bunch that don't realize it. They say, wow, no, are you sure? Are you sure? And I say, I'm absolutely sure.
I'm the beer doctor. Come on. Of course I know.
Yeah. Yeah. And so once I tell them that they are at risk of poisoning or even killing their consumers, a lot of them back up and say, uh-oh, I better fix this and do something right. And they, you know, some will continue selling it unpasteurized. Others will stop completely, and some will start pasteurizing, but a pasteurizer is very expensive, so there's a lot of them that rethink their NA strategy after they learn that they can actually poison people. And, yeah. And of course, there's plenty of lawyers out there that are just waiting to jump on a case like that and go sue the brewer, the distributor, even the retailer who sold it. In that time, it'll probably come sooner rather than later.
Well, and that just goes to it's good to reiterate that, because If in the brewing industry, we have to keep everything very, very sanitary, when we start talking about NA beers, now we have to get borderline sterile. I mean, there's a difference between sanitized and sterilized, and operating rooms are sterilized and brewing equipment are sanitized. But NA is just, that's the next step. If you think, you know, cleaning is tough in a brewery for beer, then NA is just much more so as also I've recently learned. But anyone I'm just going to be delicate and say anyone of a certain age remembers back probably to the 70s when there was I remember a discussion of if you get a can of beans or whatever it is from the store, never eat the can that's bulging. And that was just one of the like little urban myths that we heard about, is like, don't eat the bulging cans because they'll get you sick or maybe kill you or something like that. But it's funny that we have to have that same conversation again now, ironically, in non-alcoholic beers.
Absolutely, yeah, because it can make you sick. And so if you do drink non-alcoholic beer and you feel sick, potentially it could have been that beer. Could have been something else, but it could have been that non-alcoholic beer if it was not pasteurized.
Yeah.
And I warn a lot of craft brewers who get into this area with a case study that was in Boulder, Colorado. There was a juice company that used to exist up there. The name was Odwalla Juice.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They prided themselves on not pasteurizing their juices because they said the pasteurization destroyed the flavor of the juices, and it destroyed the natural vitamins, which, none of that's true. But they said that. Of course, they did experience a few minor cases of E. coli and Listeria, but they were able to handle that. However, I think it was in the mid-1990s, they did let a batch of apple juice, I believe it was apple juice, it got out and it had E. coli in it, and it ended up making 60-something people sick, and it also killed a young girl. Mm. So, of course, after that, they started pasteurizing, but of course, you know, that's too late. And to me, making someone sick is bad enough, but if you're going to wait until someone dies to start pasteurizing your product, that is inexcusable.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. I mean, you know, beer, NA or not, is meant to, add to life, add to the joy of life, not take away from it. But without asking anything proprietary, because I do understand everyone's keeping this, close to their chest or all their techniques, but just from a general knowledge standpoint, what are the different ways that that a brewery could create NA beer?
Well, I actually wrote an article addressing that particular point, and I published it in the New Brewer magazine, which is a magazine dedicated to craft brewers. And I think it was published, I think last year or maybe the year before. But in there, I talk about the different ways that brewers can make non-alcoholic beer, craft brewers. And so you can split them up into two general segments. One is kind of a mechanical segment, and the other is a biological segment. And most craft brewers use the biological method of making non-alcoholic beer. So, and the two major ways are, number one is called an arrested fermentation, and number two is using unique types of brewer's yeast that don't ferment the main sugars in wort, meaning maltose and maltotriose. Mm-hmm. So as a brewer that wants to get into it very cheaply, very quickly, they'll do an arrested fermentation where it's just that, where they start the fermentation and they stop it before the alcohol level gets above that legal point of 0.5. And then they package it and then send it out, and they filter out all the yeast. And the trouble there, though, is the products generally taste a little bit sweet, and sometimes very sweet, sometimes if a brewer's yeast is still there and not completely filtered out, that yeast will start re-fermenting in the can. And so those types of beers do have some issues. And then if you use the other biological method, which is these specialty yeasts, which it's a fairly new area, but yeasts were discovered, I'd say within the last 15 years, different types of yeasts that are growing, that were found growing on rotting fruit and other areas. But what scientists found out is some of these specialty yeasts that they isolated from different sources, a lot of them were on rotting fruit, did not have the ability to ferment wort sugars, meaning maltose and maltotriose. And so some enterprising yeast companies said, okay, what if we found these yeasts and use them to make non-alcoholic beer? And sure enough, you can get them to go into brewer's wort, and they won't touch the maltose or the maltotriose. They will ferment the glucose. And so as long as you keep the glucose level very low, you can make a non-alcoholic product. So so those are the two biological ways. Hmm. And then there's the mechanical ways where you can either use distillation or vacuum distillation, or you can use membranes, including reverse osmosis. And in the mechanical methods, you take the beer that you've made, a fully fermented beer, and then you subject it either to vacuum distillation, which when you distill something, in particular alcohol, the boiling point of alcohol, if I remember correctly, is 173 degrees Fahrenheit, something like that. Or is it 73 degrees centigrade? I think 173 degrees Fahrenheit. But that's at room temperature when it's there's no it's open pressure or open lid, and you're just boiling it. That's what temperature it'll boil off at, or the alcohol will boil off. But if you put that batch of beer under a vacuum, then the boiling point comes down to could be 80 degrees or so, or 80 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's a little bit warm, but it's not excessively hot. And at that temperature, under a vacuum, the alcohol starts boiling off, and you can actually see it, and it'll start boiling off. It's pretty impressive. And so that's one way. But the drawback there is that a vacuum distillation unit can cost as much as $1 million. So it's wow. Very expensive. And then the other mechanical way is reverse osmosis, which works. And but there are high pressures involved. Anywhere some units can be as high as 600 or 700 psi. So that's pounds per square inch of pressure. And
that's a lot of pressure to be in a to be standing around.
Yeah, and I've heard horror stories where if a hose gives, it can start whipping around with enough force to hurt or potentially even kill somebody. So so a lot of care has to be taken when you're working with those high pressures. But they do work to make non-alcoholic beer. And of all these methods I've described, the biological methods can make NA beer, but the only method that can really make alcohol free reliably is vacuum distillation. The other methods, like reverse osmosis and dialysis, you can get down to 000, but it would involve multiple passes through the unit, and so it's more time consuming, more expensive, whereas a vacuum distillation, you can just keep it going until you get to 000. So, but of course, I've just sketched out the high level aspects. There's
sure.
a lot of things you have to take into consideration to make the beer actually taste good at the end of the process.
Well, and I'm glad you used the word that was kind of bouncing around my brain as you were talking, the word dialysis. I mean, it's kind of a similar process. If you want to get something out, then you have to kind of counterflow and pull something out, you know, just like in the medical world. But that's not just a run it through the machine and you're good to go. As you have to get the balance of the counter solution just right, and that just seems like a huge headache when we're just trying to make beer without alcohol.
Yeah, it really is. And so, that's one reason a lot of brewers just stick with arrested fermentation, because it's so easy. It's fast for a brewery to do it, because there's no special equipment involved other than their regular brew house, their regular fermentation tanks. And all they do is monitor the alcohol. And as soon as it gets to that magic level of up to about 0.5, well, they'll usually stop it at 0.45 and then get it out and filter out all that yeast and generally carbonate it and then package it and then hopefully pasteurize it.
Now, are these techniques accessible to home brewers within reason, if someone wanted to go after that?
Not necessarily, because there is a lot of technology and expense involved. The only way a home brewer can really make non-alcoholic beer reliably is through distillation. And I published a book last year called Brewing with Cannabis. And in there I have a chapter with recipes and procedures for home brewers to make non-alcoholic beer at home. And the best way is really to stick with dark beers, because as you distill off the alcohol, you will get some I would say cooked flavors, which are readily hidden in a heavier beer, such as a stout or a porter. And so, but all you do is you make your home brew, usually five gallons, and once it's completely fermented, you put it back in the kettle and just heat it up to 173 degrees Fahrenheit, and just let it sit there until the alcohol boils off. And if you have a 5 or 6% alcohol beer, it generally will take about an hour to drop tenfold down to about a 0.5% beer. And I've measured the alcohol contents, and that's true at a mile high where I am in Colorado, and even at sea level, you'll get about a tenfold decrease in alcohol if you just hold it at 173 degrees and smell the alcohol coming off. Because as the alcohol gets boiled off, you smell it's a very kind of a sweet solventy smell that comes off, and as soon as that decreases in intensity, then you know most of that alcohol is gone. And then I usually hold it for an extra 30 minutes just to be safe. And at that point, you're generally at that below the 0.5% level.
Gotcha. But I do want to pivot a little bit. I mean, like I mentioned earlier, we've got a few acronyms that you are introducing to the beer world. NA is only one of them. So let's talk about the other acronyms that you're putting in your beer, THC and CBD. And so I do have to admit, I'm not a cannabis user. I've tried it in my past and it didn't really do anything for me. I had a buddy that brewed a home brew and put some cannabis in there, and I definitely felt that effect and couldn't even finish a single beer just because it was potent. But that's my only experience with anything along these lines. So I am an absolute neophyte in with the stuff. So, basically my question is, tell me and all of us about cannabis infused beer.
Okay. Well, at least from our perspective at Seria, we infuse our beer with cannabis, for the primary reason of simulating the effect that you get, the physiological effect that you get, when you drink alcohol. So for example, we make a Belgian white, and our Belgian white has 5 milligrams of THC. And a Belgian white that's alcoholic will generally have about 5% ABV. And if you drink a Blue Moon or a Avery White Rascal, any Belgian white, you'll see that you're not going to get drunk. You'll get relaxed maybe, or maybe you'll take a couple to feel relaxed.
It'll take the edge off. Yeah.
It'll take the edge off. And so we wanted to replicate that with cannabis, because what we found out right away is a lot of people don't know how many milligrams they can consume and not be stoned. And so we thought, okay, we'll do a few tests. And what we found out is 5 milligrams for most people, it simulates that level of about 5 to 6% ABV, where you feel relaxed, not stoned, but just relaxed. Some people do get a buzz, but for the most part, people feel relaxed after a 5 milligram Belgian white from Syria. And then for our IPA, we doubled it up to 10 milligrams of THC to kind of get that buzz you would get from an Imperial IPA. So if you have a big glass of Imperial IPA, most people are going to feel a buzz, because you're talking, 8 or 9 or even 10% ABV. And so most people are going to get a buzz off that. And we wanted to have that same sensation. So we said, okay, we'll put 10 milligrams of THC in. But with that level of THC and higher, some people can start to feel anxious or nervous. And so to help alleviate that, we put in CBD to make for a more mellow buzz. And so with our IPA, when you drink it, most people will get a buzz, and the CBD will kind of lead to a mellow or a calm buzz versus a buzz where you're a little bit nervous or feeling just anxious.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the whole impetus behind the dosing of our particular beers.
Well, then let me ask you, just from my lack of experience, or my sliver of experience, what is the difference between having a beer with alcohol and a beer with THC? I mean, you're both getting a little bit of a buzz, but how is the experience of that buzz different from each other?
Well, as long as you don't overdose it, so I'm talking either one. So, if you have too much alcoholic beer, people will get drunk and have a hangover the next day. If people have too much cannabis beer, people will get stoned. And then the next day, they won't have a hangover the next day. What they'll have is most people will be okay. Some will have kind of residual, a little bit of grogginess. Mm. Now, if you just take the recommended amount, which would be 1 or 2, you'll have a similar sensation. So the grain wave, like I said, it'll take the edge off, much like having an alcoholic Belgian white. But it's a little bit different, because with alcohol, you feel this warming, a little bit of a warming sensation, as your blood vessels kind of open up, and it's just a little bit kind of a warming, relaxing feeling. With cannabis, it's rather than kind of a warming, it's more of a head, in your head you're feeling just a tipsy, but not that warm feeling. So you're tipsy and relaxed. You're just relaxed without that warmth. Some people do feel a little bit of a buzz, but
I did reference the 70s earlier. Could we say you feel a little groovy?
Yeah, some people certainly feel groovy, yes.
Super. Yeah. I mean, hey, let's just call it what it is. A little note on, because we know that people do overindulge, and I've had some recent experiences of just enjoying my evening and then the next day doing an inventory of like, oh, I didn't realize I drank that much, and here I am a professional, I should know better, but stuff happens. Now, my concern is if someone's going to drink a few of some THC beer and then drink some regular beer with alcohol in it, what are the safety concerns? What is the health concerns when combining those things? Because we basically have two different depressants, and I don't know how they compound each other, but I know it's probably not ideal.
Well, and that in itself is it's difficult because you're right. Alcohol is a depressant. It's a relaxant. It relaxes the muscles, and it's a depressant because you certainly can't drink alcohol and then go run a marathon. With cannabis, it's not a depressant. It works on a number of pathways, but it's not a depressant in the way that alcohol is. Mm. Cannabis, in fact, some people will take cannabis before a workout to help them work out. Cannabis works through. So with alcohol, a lot of your listeners are probably familiar with the way alcohol works. You drink it; it goes into the body. It's broken down by the liver, and then of course some will get directly to the brain and cause the inebriation. With cannabis, it goes into the system, and the cannabinoids, THC and the other cannabinoids, will attach to what are called receptors that exist in the brain and in different parts of the body. And when they attach to these receptors, it's almost like a key. Think of THC as being almost shaped like a key. It goes into the receptor, which is like a lock, and it turns it on, and then that will cause this intoxication. Or in the case of other cannabinoids, and there are more than 100 cannabinoids in the cannabis plant, THC leads to intoxication, as well as some other things like it's an anti-inflammatory. It actually does some good things in addition to making people buzzed. But there are more than 100 of these different cannabinoids, CBD, CBG, CBN, just lots of them in the plant. And most people don't know what these things do. But some initial studies have shown that some of these cannabinoids will go into the body. And some will give you energy like caffeine, but not caffeine the way we know it, but it'll give you energy. Mm-hmm. Some will make you feel super creative, like you can solve any problem in the world. Others will give you courage so that you take some and all of a sudden you just feel courageous, like you just go into the worst job interview ever and do a fantastic job. And then there's still others that are like Viagra, some that are pain relievers. So these things, there's so many of them. And that's the interesting part about the plant is that as soon as it's federally legal, you're going to see a lot of big pharma companies and universities research the heck out of the plant and try to patent all these different cannabinoids as to how they work on the human body.
Now, and we are getting close on time. I don't want to keep you too long, but this is just fascinating to me. And one of the things I think we need to discuss or flesh out with whatever time you want to give to it is, what is the upside or what are the health benefits of this? And what is the downside? What are the words of caution that you would share with people who, or maybe even to the skeptics who are like, oh, that's just drugs in my beard. You know, what do you say to both the good and the bad of this?
Well, with the good, one thing is that currently, and I think in the future, we're not going to be able to sell or purchase products that have both alcohol and cannabis because of the unknowns. And so one good thing is that if you do drink a cannabis beverage, you won't be consuming alcohol with it. That's obviously a good thing for your liver and for your health. Another thing is that the cannabinoids are natural. They're from the cannabis plant, and they're very functional. So you can actually put cannabinoids in that get the reaction that you want. So if you wanted to just get buzzed, it's THC. If you want to have pain relief, it'd probably be a combination of CBD and maybe CBG with a little bit of CBN. And if you want to lose weight, maybe you're a few pounds overweight and you just want to lose weight. Well, you won't have alcohol, which is the main driver of calories in alcoholic beer. So that's one good thing. But if you use a compound, a cannabinoid called THCV, along with the natural hop terpenes, there's one called humulene, which is natural in hops. Yeah. So humulene with THCV will make you feel like you've just eaten a Thanksgiving meal. You will not be hungry, and you can lose weight. So there's all kinds of functional benefits that are going to be derived from cannabis. And I could go on and on with all the different types that you can come up with, but that's the good things that it's natural, very functional, and in general, not habit forming. However, with anything, there is the danger of getting hooked or whatever. Because with alcohol, we see people who become alcoholics, and with cannabis, the term is cannabis use disorder, which is people get hooked on cannabis, and that's a fact. But it's not as I would say dangerous or it's not as addictive as like heroin or crystal meth, which those ones are very highly addictive. Cannabis, at least when you look at the number of users out there, the number of people who have cannabis use disorder, you see just unscientifically that most people should be hooked and they're not. So that's one of the good things.
Not like they are to Netflix anyway. I mean, talk about addiction. there's a lot of things we can talk about.
I guess some of the bad things are certainly what I just mentioned, cannabis use disorder. There are some people who will develop that, but that is, at least in my experience, that's the minority of people. And then another potential negative is the overdosing aspect, meaning if you have too much THC, you can get stoned and it'll last for a good 3 hours, maybe 4 hours, where somebody, if they've had too much THC, they just get couch locked, meaning they will generally go to the couch, lay down in the fetal position, and not want to move for up to 3 hours. With overdosing of cannabis, I've not read a case where somebody has overdosed with cannabis and died. It's generally they feel bad and then they recover. However, with alcohol, if people overdose with alcohol, they can get to a point where their blood alcohol level will get into the range where they can actually die. So alcohol is very, very serious when you overdose with alcohol.
Yeah.
With cannabis, generally what you see is people get into the fetal position for 3 or 4 hours, don't feel good at all, and then after that it wears off and then they're back to normal.
I think good PSA would be to say something to the effect where that person who on a Friday night or whenever will go get a six pack of Coors Banquet, for example, and drink all of them in a setting, you don't do that with the THC beer. You need to understand how this is going to affect you. So you know, try it and tread lightly, because, you know, it's going to be different.
Yeah, that is absolutely the case, that people should, any of your listeners who want to try it in states where it's legal, start out slowly, because if you haven't had it before, or if it's been 20 years since you've had it, start out very slowly, because today's cannabis is much different than you may have had 20 years ago. So start very slow and then work your way up. And what you'll find is some people are very sensitive to it, and it doesn't take much to get them buzzed. Others have a very high natural tolerance, and they'll find that even 100 milligrams does almost nothing for them. And it's just because all of us are different. It's the same with alcohol. There's some of us out there who have one Coors Light, and you know, they have a red face and they're flushed and buzzed. Mm-hmm. Others can drink a six pack of IPA and have just barely a buzz because they have a high natural tolerance for alcohol.
Yeah.
So with anything, especially cannabis, start slowly, see where you are and what your tolerance is. And then if you want, build up from there, but certainly stop if you don't feel good.
Gotcha. And so last question before we start winding down, but if your company Saria and the unique beers that you produce are a form of communication, what are you trying to say?
Well, what we're trying to say is that beer is something that's been around for so long, but we're taking it to a whole new level, because for the thousands of years that beer has been here with us, it's been almost the same beverage, where you take grains, let them ferment with or without hops, and you have an alcoholic beverage, whether it's low alcohol or high alcohol, and you drink it. What we're saying is, okay, you can make a beverage with the same grains or even other grains or no grains. You can make it with water, but you can make a beverage, and you can, if you want to get buzzed or relaxed, you can do that with cannabis. You can evolve beer into something that resembles what it was, but it's a whole new different experience. And so what we're doing is we're pushing the envelope of what beer can be.
Fantastic. Now, this next question is, because you are a doctor of beerology or the beer doctor, whatever colloquialism you'd like to use, if you could become the Surgeon General of the beer world for an entire day, what's the first thing you would change?
Oh, gosh. For the beer world, I guess, the first thing is to make it a requirement that anybody that makes non-alcoholic beer has to get it pasteurized. You can use chemical preservatives, but for the most part, most people don't want chemical preservatives in their beer. So I would say, it has to be, pasteurized to be safe. And then the other thing I would do is I would say cannabis is an acceptable format for beer. Cannabis non-alcoholic beer is an acceptable way of drinking beer. And I would put out guidelines for what to expect and what to follow as far as consuming cannabis beer, because as I said earlier, a lot of us don't know how many milligrams we can safely consume without getting buzzed or stoned. And so I would put those guidelines on, because I think most of us know just not naturally, but through experience, that if we drink a light beer, we'll generally not feel anything or maybe feel relaxed with one light beer. And if we drink an Imperial IPA, most of us will get a buzz. If we drink a glass of wine, a lot of us will also get a buzz. And if we drink a big, stiff drink, we'll get a buzz. And so we know naturally what our body will do as we drink something low in alcohol and something high in alcohol. Mm-hmm. Cannabis, a lot of us aren't sure. And so I would develop some kind of a guideline so that you know what to expect with cannabis and with alcohol, so that people aren't as intimidated by it.
Fantastic. But because you are the Surgeon General of the beer world, you are going to be the Earth's ambassador to Mars, and you get to introduce the Martians to our beer and food culture. But there's only room in your suitcase for one style of beer and one style of food. What's the first thing you're going to introduce Martians to kind of share our culture of beer and food?
Well, if I couldn't take mine,
it could be anything. But you know, your luggage got lost, but luckily you stuck one bottle and one thing of food in your suitcase. So what are those?
I guess what I would do is take a bottle of IPA, dry hopped IPA, because to me it's hops are a cousin of cannabis. And so if you smell hops and taste them and taste that beer, that's going to be similar to what you have with regarding any type of beer, even with cannabis. And so I think that's what I would do is take a bottle of IPA. And then as far as the food, having lived in Belgium, gosh, I just love Belgian food. So I'd probably take a big container of Belgian frites, which are their French fries, with a big container of mayonnaise. And
I was going to say, is there mayonnaise going with those?
And have that IPA with frites and show them just a special Belgian treat, and say there's so much more than that, but that's just where it starts.
I think I just heard most of America cringe while the rest of the world cheered when you said that with mayonnaise. So so that's wonderful. Last big question before we kind of finish this off, but how do you define good beer, and most importantly, why does it matter so much?
Well, for me, I say any beer is good that's in my hand. To me, it's if it's bad, I generally don't say it's bad. I just say it's overpriced. And so yeah, it's to me all beer is good, and it represents what the brewer was trying to do. Because there's so many good brewers out there, even beginning brewers, you know, they put their heart into making a beer, and so you taste it, and maybe the style isn't up my alley, but I get what they're trying to do. So I really love all types of beer, because I've traveled around the world and had some that are very, very different, very unique, and others that are just fantastic that I would have never thought that you could brew like that. And so, yeah, so to me, I love any type of beer. So a good beer is really something that's in your hand that you've paid money for and that you're actually enjoying. And that can be any style, any type of beer. And that's what makes today one of the best times ever to be a beer drinker, is because there's so many styles out there. And now there's even a lot of fantastic non-alcoholic styles to choose from, and cannabis beer. So it's just the best time ever to be a beer drinker.
Yeah, and I do love your definition. And by that definition, I've had a lot of overpriced $1 beers when I was in college. But it is an interesting time, and I love that. And you know, because of the work you're doing, and a few others that are really pushing that NA beer boundary, I can still enjoy a beer. I can still have something that that tastes like beer to me and satisfies my palate, but I don't have to get that high or the buzz, especially if I'm with my family or we're around water at the lake or something like that. I want to have something to drink, but you know, you gotta keep it cool. So NA beers are proliferating now as a fantastic option to, you don't need to let all of your adult sensibilities go just because you want to have a beer. So, thank you for that. Anyone who's listening, if they want to reach out either to you or the company, learn more, find ways to try your beer, where can they go?
They go to our website, where we have a store locator if they want to do that, and we also sell it directly to consumers. And again, they can find that on our website. We're on Instagram, Facebook. All the general channels that people go to nowadays.
Yeah.
And we're also available in 20 states. So people can just ask at their local liquor store. The bigger ones in particular, like Total Wine, we're in most Total Wines across the U.S. Let's see, Texas, we're in HEB, and we're Target stores. Yeah, people can go around and look. And then if they want a cannabis beer, we're only in Colorado and California. We're in most dispensaries in Colorado. And in California, we just entered that market at the end of last year. So I think we're probably in 70 or 80 different dispensaries over there and expanding. So, so yeah, just look around for us, get on our website. We have two different websites, one for infused product and one for just NA product. So just be careful when you look at the website that it's either focused on the infused cannabis products or it's focused on the non-alcoholic, non-infused. And those store locators on each side will tell you where which dispensaries to look for us in or which stores to find our NA product in.
And I will put both of those websites that they kind of look very, very similar, but they are different. I will put both of those in the show notes for a quick link for anyone listening. But do you have any calls to action or final words of wisdom for anyone listening?
Well, I guess the only thing I would say is don't be afraid to try non-alcoholic beer because it's not the way it was back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, where O'Doul's and those types of beers were out there. And they certainly served their purpose back then. But nowadays, non-alcoholic beer and alcohol-free beer is becoming something really, really interesting to try. But in particular, I would say try our beers. Try our Seria alcohol-free IPA and our Seria alcohol-free Belgian White. And if you're in a state where it's legal, such as Colorado and California, try those and compare them to the feeling you get from an alcoholic beer. And even try our NA beers and compare the body and the taste and texture to an alcohol beer. And don't be afraid. Get out there, try them, and get a taste of what the future of beer is becoming.
Well, and I will share this, that Jeff did send me some samples of your Grain Wave and your IPA, the Indie Wave. And I have tried a few different NA beers from different breweries. Some were just okay. Some I didn't like at all. And there are some that were pretty good, where I would buy a six pack and take it if I were trying to keep it down or keep it cool. I honestly, and I'm not paid or incentivized in any way to say this, but your beers are fantastic. They were they satisfied that. They scratched that beer itch that I get when I'm just like, ooh, I need a beer. They were tasty. They had flavor to them. It wasn't a perfect example of an IPA or a Belgian wit, but they were given what they were and given the right tool for the right job, they were wonderful. So thank you for doing the work you're doing. Thank you for putting out great beer. Obviously, your PhD in beer has paid off because those are fantastic.
Well, thank you, Jeremy. Yeah, we certainly think so. And you know, you can have it any time because it's one of those beverages that has absolutely zero alcohol. And in fact, a ripe banana has more alcohol than a case of our beer. And you can have our beer, you know, in the morning with breakfast, at lunch, at dinner. You could even drink our beers when you're driving a car. So it's it really takes beer to a whole new level.
and if you get pulled over because you're drinking a beer, you can offer one to the cop and say, there's no alcohol. Enjoy one. It's on me.
Exactly.
I don't recommend that. But if that happens to someone, then please get me on Instagram. I want to see a picture of that. Anyway, thank you for being here today. Thank you for sharing your story and the work you're doing. I think it's fascinating and wonderful and such an incredible contribution to everything else that's going on in the beer world. So just thank you.
Well, thank you, Jeremy. It's been my pleasure, and I hope your listeners learn a few tidbits and can really get out there and keep enjoying good beer.
Because it matters. Good beer matters.
Some days I'm in the mood for a pale lager. Other days I want something dark and interesting. The point is, a wide diversity in beer styles lets us choose our experience. Whatever beer acronym you choose, NA, CBD, THC, we have options. My options may not be for you, and vice versa, but it's the diversity of choice that keeps it interesting. In the next episode, we visit with an expert and discuss beer quality and the most important part of a brew day. Good Beer Matters is a show about great beer, great friends, and the experiences we create together. But it's also about better beer education so you can level up your game. So if you're a beer and food professional or even a beer enthusiast, then please subscribe to Good Beer Matters podcast and go to goodbeermatters.net for more resources and next steps. After that, grab a beer, hang out with friends, and let the world open up. Thank you for listening. Cheers.